It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now, the road ahead for marijuana. There's a renewed push in Congress to decriminalize the drug at the federal level. 37 states, along with the District of Columbia, allow the medical use of cannabis products. That's according to the National Conference of State Legislatures. Wisconsin, though, being an outlier, without legalized marijuana for medicinal or recreational use. We hear about Colorado's approach now. The state legalized it for adults nearly a decade ago. Join in 800-642-1234. Allison Rosenthal and Jack Reed are with Colorado's Division of Criminal Justice Office of Research and Statistics. Allison is a statistical analyst. Welcome to the Ideas Network, Allison.
Hi, thanks.
Yes, and Jack Reed is research director in this office. Jack, welcome to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. So, Jack, starting with you, after Colorado legalized marijuana for recreational use, your state's legislature says, okay, we need to study this. What is the state monitoring specifically?
Sure. So in 2013, they passed a law and they just kind of said, we've got a lot of things that we're interested in. And so they passed 17 different metrics that they asked me to track on. And they kind of fall into the general categories of public safety, public health, and impacts on youth. So for public safety, interest in arrests and offenses, what's happening in schools for arrests and offenses, what's happening with the illicit market. So what are we seeing with seizures? And in particular, seizures on public land. And then as well, what are we seeing in court cases? Are we seeing more organized crime types of cases? For public health, looking at, is the prevalence of marijuana use increasing? And, you know, what types of products are being used? Are people going to the hospital, the emergency department, calling poison control? And then with youth, again, you know, what's happening in schools? What's happening with suspensions and expulsions? And, you know, are kids using more marijuana? And, you know, are we in other ways kind of putting kids in danger through the legalization of marijuana?
So they really wanted a fuller snapshot across systems, across, you know, society. Do you have the data to really accurately measure those impacts of legalization?
I'll be honest, that was the first thing that I started looking into. And I think that there was an assumption by the legislature that all of this data existed and was just going to be readily available to us so that I could, you know, do trends back to 2006 with no difficulties. And what we found very quickly was that either the data didn't exist going back at all, or the trends kind of changed over time. For example, our fatalities data from our Department of Transportation, they improved their data collection, which is fantastic, but it makes those numbers prior to their improvement of data collection not really comparable. So, and I think we found that in a lot of different places, where one thing we really focused on after legalization was improving our data collection. And so over time, we've really stepped up a lot, especially around something like impaired driving. And, you know, thankfully, I think our explanations for why we just didn't have that data, were suitable to folks, because you can't kind of make something exist. It's just,
and you can't make those, right, you can't make it up or those educated guesses either to connect the dots, right. Allison, to you, has legalization led to more adults using marijuana?
Yeah, that is what we're seeing. So since the opening of the retail market in 2014, past month self-reported marijuana use has increased in adults aged 18 and older. And now the rate is about like 19% of adults reported using marijuana in the past month. That's actually similar to what the prevalence is for binge drinking. So this does suggest that those activities, there are similar norms around those uses. And what we're also kind of concerned about is that half of adults that used marijuana reported using daily or near daily. So these are very heavy users of marijuana. And then,
Oh,
oh,
go
sorry, go ahead.
ahead. No, carry on.
And I was just going to point out that typically we're seeing the highest amount of use of marijuana in males aged 25 to 34, but we really have seen increases in use in both genders and also in all age groups of 25 years and older.
Now, are those through surveys? What does your raw data look like there?
Yeah, that's actually from our population survey that we give out each year from the health department. It's the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance Survey, and actually Wisconsin has the same survey. We are able to add marijuana questions to that, and we started asking those questions in 2014.
We're talking about how legalizing marijuana has affected life in Colorado after nearly a decade. Allison Rosenthal there, Jack Reed there with the Colorado Division of Criminal Justice. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Jack, one of the arguments against legalization is that more teens, more young people will use marijuana. What are you seeing in terms of youth and that age group?
So I think we've been fortunate, Kate, in that we haven't seen any increases in youth marijuana use. And we haven't seen it in our, larger Colorado survey or in the National Survey on Drug Use and Health. It's remained really consistent. And actually, over the last couple of years, it's gone down a little bit, which has been great to see. One thing we have seen, which is concerning, is kids are more likely to use more concentrated types of products. So oftentimes when people think about marijuana, they think of, the flower, the plant matter. But we also have things called concentrates, where you take that plant matter and you concentrate the THC. So it's a, a higher percentage of Delta-9 THC, which is the psychoactive component of marijuana. And, so while we aren't seeing an increase in the overall prevalence, the types of use have changed.
What about the consumption of edibles with this younger age population? What have you seen there?
I don't think we've seen as much with edibles, and this is a thing, and this is to also to Allison's point about our adult survey. But gradually we've improved the questions we ask, and so we ask the question, we add the questions about, are you using edibles? Are you vaping? Are you using concentrate? And those are questions that we have added over time. Again, we've definitely seen the biggest increases, I think, in concentrates. I think we've seen a lot of changes in edibles.
Allison, one of the concerns from the education and medical community is, what effect it will have on young people in terms of school and school discipline. What could you track there?
So in Colorado, we do track those offenses in school, and these are law enforcement like contacts, and we do see that the number of marijuana offenses actually dropped after 2014, but it has since stabilized. However, marijuana is still the most common reason for officers to arrest students or to ticket students, and this accounts for about 20% of offenses reporting in school. About a quarter of those, and a quarter of those reported in high school. So schools initially didn't differentiate, and when they were tracking school discipline, marijuana from other drugs, and they only started breaking that out in 2016. So this just goes to Jack's point of just about how much we've really improved our data systems after legalization. Similar to this, marijuana accounted for about a third of expulsions and law enforcement referrals. That said, we really haven't seen increases in graduation rates or decreases in the dropout rate. So we don't think that it's had an effect really on some of these education outcomes that we're really concerned about.
Allison Rosenthal and Jack Reed, they analyze the impact of marijuana legalization in Colorado. They look at law enforcement and public health, education, we were just talking about there, impaired driving, other areas. And they're with Colorado's Division of Criminal Justice Office of Research and Statistics. Join in at these intersections, what you want to glean from Colorado. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Colorado was one of the first states to legalize cannabis, and we explore the data that has been collected and analyzed over the decade, from health policy to law enforcement, criminal justice, to the business, the marijuana business economy, and how these ripple effects could inform where Wisconsin, you know, has marijuana remaining illegal. We have research director Jack Reed and statistical analyst Allison Rosenthal. They're with Colorado's Division of Criminal Justice Office of Research and Statistics. Let's go to Rich in Rhinelander. Rich, hi, what's your question?
Hi, thank you. I'm interested in whether or not the range of the study includes socioeconomic data. And the reason I ask that is with regard to young people or people within less affluent minority populations, I think there's a linkage popularly between marijuana, the demon weed, and crime, and an assumption that nice people do not, meaning wealthier people do not use, particularly youngsters, do not use marijuana. And I'm wondering if their data collects anything like that.
Rich, thank you. Jack, go ahead.
So we don't necessarily collect that data exactly. I can tell you, though, interestingly, when we look at the prevalence, one place where we've seen the largest increase of use is for those 65 and older. It started out at 3% and it's up to a little bit over 9% now. And so I think to your point about the kind of the social acceptability of it for people who wouldn't typically be considered a normal marijuana user, we have seen that reducing, I believe we've seen that reducing that stigma and making it so you're not at risk for criminal for criminal charges has changed some of the behavior, especially in our older population. We don't specifically ask questions around the socioeconomic status of folks when we're doing these surveys, at least not in the data I have access to. And so I think that for me, that's probably the most interesting thing that I've seen is that increase in the older population.
Has there been a reduction in racial disparities among people who are arrested or convicted? What did you find there?
So interestingly, what we found is the arrest rate have gone down, across the board between 60 to 70% for all racial categories. But we have seen a persistent racial disparity, that the disparity itself hasn't changed. So the ratio of African-American arrests to white arrests is about 2 to 1. And with Latinos, it's about 1.5 to 1. And, we've seen that ratio maintain just about exactly over the last just about 10 years.
Allison, we heard from Phil called from Madison with a question and wants to know, with the rise of marijuana use among adults, have you seen a decrease in alcohol use?
We have not seen a decrease in alcohol use. Alcohol use remains pretty strong in Colorado. I think we're starting to monitor more and we're seeing more use of marijuana and alcohol together. And this is this does raise some definite public health and public safety concerns just around impaired driving and other development of other diseases. So we're definitely tracking this. And it is interesting, though, to see the differences in drug use norms, as Jack was alluding to.
what increases do you see in people driving under the influence of cannabis?
Yeah, Colorado, we're doing a better job of monitoring marijuana-impaired driving. And we don't have perfect data, but we do are able to look at DUI cases that had drug screening. And in these records, about half of people test positive for THC. And this is the psychoactive component of marijuana, as Jack alluded to earlier. And we find that people who test positive for THC, about three quarters test positive for another substance in addition. And the most common one is alcohol. And we looked at specifically convicted drivers and at their rate of crash involvement. And those that tested positive for THC and another drug have a greater rate of crash involvement compared to those who test positive for THC alone. So that's why it's just a public safety concern.
Are officers in Colorado trained to recognize when drivers are under the influence of marijuana? I mean, how do they suss that out?
Yeah, I think over time, too, they're starting, a lot of officers are getting better at understanding the signs. And we have additional training for officers. We have green labs where officers do a 1-day training and get to learn how to administer field sobriety tests on people under the influence of marijuana. And then we're also training officers to be drug recognition experts. And these individuals get additional training and certification on field sobriety tests and psychological tests to detect marijuana impairment. And they act as kind of consultants for law enforcement officers who don't have this training. They can be called onto a case to administer additional tests if the officer suspects a drug impairment is involved.
Allison Rosenthal and Jack Reed there with the Colorado Division of Criminal Justice as we learn about how legalizing marijuana has affected life in Colorado as they look at a lot of different data. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Larry is here from Kingston. Larry, what would you like to bring up?
Hi. I've been smoking marijuana for about 50 years. I'm approaching 70, and you know, I find it a lot less harsh on the body than alcohol, although I mix alcohol and marijuana. And I suggest to everybody to get their work out of their way before they smoke pot or drink. I think, you know, in my early days when there was, it was hard to get marijuana at times, people have turn to other drugs, harder drugs that hurt people.
And Larry, I want to pause right there. Allison, what health impacts do you see in Colorado related to marijuana, and you know specifically with hospitalizations?
Oh yeah, that is a good way to kind of track if there are specific adverse acute effects of marijuana. We have been tracking this data, but like Jack said, there are some disruptions in the data. Their hospitals made a coding change in October of 2015, and then also the COVID-19 pandemic really disrupted hospital utilization patterns. Despite this, what we can say is from 2013 to 2014, we saw a significant increase in marijuana-related emergency department and hospital visits. But since 2016, we've actually seen a decrease. So we are not as concerned about marijuana-related hospitalizations compared to hospitalizations for other drugs like fentanyl and stimulants. We've really seen those have the larger share of hospital visits.
Jack, I want to land on tax revenue in Colorado and what legalization has done. How much funding, much money in taxes has it generated?
We sold over $2.24 billion of legal regulated adult use cannabis products last year. And with that, we collected about $230 million in taxes. That's one thing I think as we've looked at ourselves as a state, we've worked to invest some of that tax money in the areas where we see the greatest potential impact. So we invest about a quarter of that money in schools, and then we also invest in affordable housing, as well as drug treatment. And so I think what we've done is, as we've looked at, you know, we have this kind of tax windfall. We don't necessarily want that money to just go to Colorado's general fund. We would like it to.
You want to target it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, Allison and Jack, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you.
Allison Rosenthal and Jack Reed, they're with the Colorado Division of Criminal Justice. Allison, statistical analyst, and Jack is research director. We have a link to their 2021 report on the impact of marijuana legalization in that state at WPR.org/mornings. We continue this conversation ahead. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Marijuana is one of the top issues in the governor's race. Governor Tony Evers says he would include cannabis legalization in the next state budget. His challenger, Tim Michaels, does not support legalization, which reflects the view of Republican lawmakers who have blocked Evers' marijuana decriminalization proposals before. We get the view from Colorado, one of the first states to legalize recreational use a decade ago. Join in, 800-642-1234. Thomas Mitchell is here, has covered Colorado's cannabis industry and culture since 2014 for Denver's alt-weekly newspaper, Westward. Thomas, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me, Kate. Pleasure to be here.
Well, set the scene for us, if you will. How is marijuana legalization changing life in Colorado?
Changing life, that's an interesting question. I think a lot of people that grew up in Colorado would say that it hasn't changed a lot, other than maybe it's kind of like created a really big industry, a workforce. I think over 40,000 jobs or something like that, Colorado, have been created by the cannabis industry out here. So I think just in terms of, you know, you meet a lot of people and their brother works in the industry or their sister does marketing for it. So I think it's just become normalized as part of the culture out here.
Can you walk us through what it is like to buy cannabis products at one of these legal establishments along the road or in a strip mall or somewhere else?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. It's it's kind of like a liquor store, except it's a little more tied down, I guess you'd say. You know, like there's a waiting room at all of these stores. You have to go in and show your ID to get let in, and they have to scan it. And that can, you know, turn some people away that aren't familiar with that. But once you get in, you meet with someone called a bud tender who stands behind a counter, and they typically show you the products, whether it's a cannabis flower, extract, or they might pull some edibles out. So it's not as much like free shopping as a traditional retail experience, but it's nothing, you know, too out of hand.
Are these stores concentrated in specific areas? And what do you see along Colorado border towns?
Yeah, there definitely are. I think a lot of this happened in the medical marijuana days before these regulations were really set in stone. It was hard for a lot of these dispensaries and cannabis businesses to find landlords who would take them. So in some cases, like a Denver stretch of South Broadway, it actually increased the real estate prices quite a bit because they were willing to pay in all cash, and they were usually willing to pay a lot more than the standard rate. So you have South Broadway, which some people call Broadsterdam or the Green Mile, just because there's so many stores out there, and other stretches of Denver that fall into that category as well. As far as border towns, there's definitely some that have jumped into that. I think Trinidad would be one that comes to mind. That's right on the border of New Mexico. I think they have 27 stores for something like 5,000 residents. I might be off on the residents there, but it's definitely less than 10,000 people, and it's almost 30 stores. So, and they don't, you know, shy away from the fact that this is a border town. We're trying to make some tax dollars here. But New Mexico just legalized, Arizona legalized. Some of these states are looking into it as well, that border Colorado. So some of these border towns are running into a sticky situation.
I would imagine that changes the economics pretty quickly when the neighboring state changes their laws toward legalization.
Absolutely. I think some of these towns recognize that because New Mexico, at least specifically, had kind of a slow burn into recreational legalization. We knew it was coming. So I think some of these towns have tried to diversify or kind of get out of depending on that. But yeah, when you're making millions of dollars in a town of less than 10,000 people, I think it's kind of hard not to depend on that a little bit.
Let's bring in a call now. Jeremy is with us from Racine. Jeremy, hi, what's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my call. I want to get a take on how the employers are coping with the legalization. In retrospect to the safety aspect of having a job with OSHA and legalization.
And Jeremy, you're breaking up a good bit there, but I think I understand the gist of what you're trying to say. How are employers handling this, especially, you know, for specific jobs that, you know, may include heavy machinery? And what do you do if someone comes to work who has been using?
Right. I think that's another kind of obstacle states run into after they legalized is how do you approach consumption, especially off the clock. When it comes to jobs that, you know, operate heavy machinery or law enforcement, there's really no way around that. I don't think they can necessarily use it on, I mean, obviously can't use it on the clock, but Colorado still hasn't defined a law to allow or protect people using cannabis when they're not working. So it has caused some issues for employers, especially when it comes to jobs like, construction, nursing. I think the governor just issued an executive order to allow these people to keep their professional licenses, but it's created some workforce issues in certain areas, definitely. But I think a lot of that comes down to the state legislature and how they want to protect employees from doing this. As far as insurance goes, I haven't heard too many issues in terms of insurance claims and stuff like that. But I do know OSHA has been pretty involved in trying to create regulations for the cannabis industry. So I don't think OSHA's necessarily shied away from cannabis.
We're talking about Colorado's marijuana industry with Thomas Mitchell, who covers it for Denver's Westword newspaper. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Thomas, what political fights are still being fought over marijuana in Colorado? Where are the tensions at this point?
Yeah, I think the most recent one that played out is over the potency of these products. And I think a lot of parents have been concerned over how some of these extracted marijuana products that can range from, you know, 60 to 90% THC, how they can affect their kids if they get a hand on it. I don't think these are the types of products that parents were used to growing up with. So I don't know they necessarily knew how to talk to their children about these. So that's definitely become an issue. And as the midterms come up, Colorado Springs, the second biggest city in Colorado, they still don't even allow recreational marijuana sales, but they have 115 medical dispensaries. So they're voting to allow recreational sales. But the mayor is a big opponent against that. And there's also a big military base in Colorado Springs. So that's something that we've been looking at for a while out here. I think Colorado, a lot of the issues that it deals with, whether it's potency or hospitality, youth use, are kind of a window into what other states should expect when they legalize.
Let's go to Nathan now in Burlington. Nathan, hi, go ahead.
Hi, I was calling for a different reason, but I would like to respond to the prior caller wondering about employment. And being from Wisconsin, you can go to any tavern any night and see a construction worker or a heavy equipment operator there after work. So anything you do outside of work should not matter anyway. But I do want to add that my daughter lived in Gunnison, Colorado, which is not a border town by any means. A town of less than 10,000 people, and they had five dispensaries, I believe, when I was there. And being from Burlington, we have a lot of empty storefronts. And you go to these dispensaries, and there's three to four people working behind the counter, but you also have all the other jobs of delivery and growing and trimming and everything else. And I just like to add that, you know, it's a It would create a lot of employment in this state, and it would also create a lot of tax money for things that are needed. And that's about all I got to say.
Nathan, thank you for bringing that. Thomas, what has it meant for job creation in Colorado?
It's meant quite a bit, and I think the industry is going through kind of a bumpy period right now just because of the overexpansion during COVID and other states legalizing and inflation. I think some jobs actually are being laid off in Colorado right now, but that's not to take away from overall. I mean, it's I think Colorado sold over $2.2 billion worth of marijuana last year. I think overall since 2014, the state, and this isn't counting local taxes, but state taxes have accounted for over $2 billion. So it definitely has made an impact in the economy, and that's not in counting, you know, the tourism dollars. That was a pretty big reason why people were visiting here from around 2014 to 2019. That's died off a little bit as well. But I think when you have a place like Colorado with so many resort towns like Breckenridge, Gunnison is even one of those as well, because there's a lot of great hiking out there. You're always going to have these opportunities to sell cannabis because you have a lot of tourists out here willing to spend money.
Something caught my ear earlier when you said about cash, doing business in cash in Colorado for these businesses and storefronts getting up and running. I'm just wondering, you know, banks have largely refrained from servicing marijuana-related businesses due to the federal classification as a Schedule I drug. So what about banking and lines of credit? I mean, we do see Congress moving on the Safe Banking Act, perhaps, but how does the financial piece work?
Yeah, it's been tricky, I think. It also creates some opportunities for smaller banks and credit unions to serve these businesses, because some of them will take that risk on for a significant fee. But it's affected smaller operations because they can't get loans and lines of credit is harder to get. So it's also kind of, I think, hastened the takeover of some mom and pop shops in Colorado. And then there's also a criminal aspect, because these businesses are so cash heavy. They are targets for burglaries and armed robberies. So many of them have to have security guards. And I think some of these places have figured out ways to get rid of cash, but I don't think the thieves have really learned that yet. So there's still break-ins that are frequent at dispensaries. So there's still a push out here for the Safe Banking Act. The congressman who introduced it is from Colorado. I think it's passed the House in some form 7 times already, but it hasn't received a hearing yet in the Senate. So that's as Biden pardoned all of these marijuana convictions, there's kind of been a renewed push for that.
What would it do for cannabis banking? Like, what would it open up?
It would essentially protect financial institutions from being charged with drug trafficking laws. Because marijuana is still federally illegal, these banks could technically be charged with drug trafficking by taking money from these businesses. So if the Safe Banking Act were passed, it would essentially protect these businesses from going under from doing that. So it would, you know, open up potentially like the Wells Fargos of the world to cannabis. And it would also, you know, open up loans and some interstate business as well.
Journalist Thomas Mitchell stays with us on how marijuana legalization has changed the state of Colorado. He's with Denver's Alt Weekly called Westward. Still time to talk about the Colorado experiment, if you will, a decade after recreational use became legal in that state. Your takeaways for Wisconsin and its future, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Vice President Kamala Harris on Late Night with Seth Meyers this week.
Nobody should have to go to jail for smoking weed, right?
Yeah.
Right? And so we start with that, and then we are, to your point, urging, and the president has been very clear, we're urging governors and states to take our lead and to pardon people who have been criminalized for possession of marijuana.
Join in on marijuana, what you see for Wisconsin, 800-642-1234. Journalist Thomas Mitchell, covering marijuana legalization in Colorado since 2014, stays with us. Thomas, to the point of Vice President Harris, President Joe Biden pardoned thousands of people who had been convicted or charged federally with marijuana possession this month, and his administration really pushing to review whether to recategorize the drug, expedite that. Did ending prohibition affect crime or equity in your state? What's happened in Colorado, based on what's happened at the federal level?
Well, I guess in regards to crimes, a lot of things like simple possession and things like that have gone down. There have been arguments that some forms of crime have gone up, such as illegal cultivations, just because it's a little easier to like start a home grow in Colorado and take advantage of some of those laws and then divert the cannabis grown into another state where it still is illegal. So as you still kind of have some of these federal and state conflicts, I think that there still are going to be opportunities for people that want to take advantage of that.
Let's go to Lynn now in Hales Corners. Lynn, hi.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. What would you like to bring up, Lynn?
Well, I just want to say that I hope marijuana is never legalized in the state of Wisconsin. And the reason being is that I have had personal experiences with some of my family members who often forget things. They seem impaired. But aside from all of that, I would like to know if the city of Denver has looked at some of the social problems. The only thing that I noticed with regard to Denver is that the city is constantly looking for social service personnel, for more policing, for child protective service workers, and they do tend to have a lot of impaired people on the roadways and in the city. There's also high homeless. I've been to Denver, and people live in the streets.
Lynn, I want Thomas to jump in here. Thomas, through your reporting, are there any echoes of what Lynn is saying, or what can you say here?
Well, Denver has had an increased homeless issue, but there's been several reports, and they've debunked that rumor that cannabis legalization is connected to it. I think Denver's going through a lot of issues that other cities west of the Mississippi are that are growing exponentially fast. We have, a lot of money coming in, gentrifying the city, and it's pushing a lot of people out. I don't know if cannabis is necessarily connected to that. There have been issues that arise when, you legalize this. But I think a lot of the things that she's pointing to could be, connected to other things as well.
How is Colorado using the tax revenue from this industry as it, is it in terms of its spending? Like, what is it doing with the tax revenue from marijuana?
Yeah, it's kind of cut out. And that's a question we get often, and we write about it often, but it still is kind of hard to map out sometimes. A chunk off the top is taken for school construction, public schools construction to build whatever projects they want to build. Another is taken off for the general public school fund, which can fund after-school services, drug prevention, new employees for drug prevention, things like that. And then I think the rest goes into the general fund, which funds various state projects. And that's not counting where we've seen the biggest impact, actually, is at the local level. A lot of these towns are instituting their own special sales taxes on top of the state. And it's usually around 10% or higher. So we've seen Aurora, which is a big suburb, able to build a homeless shelter. The city of Pueblo, Colorado, has sent dozens of kids to school on scholarships from cannabis money. I believe Edgewater, which is another small suburb, was able to fix its sidewalk. So at the local level, I think we're seeing these things bear fruit a little more tangibly.
So a local tax of 10% or higher, they're able to issue those taxes on cannabis products?
Yes. So I think in Denver, if you buy something at a dispensary, recreational, medical marijuana is a little bit different because it's considered a medication. They don't carry the same one. But the recreational one in Denver is a little over 26%. And that is pretty high compared to the rest of the country. Wow. Yeah. And there's been arguments about that, too, about whether that should be changed or raised or decreased. But with those taxes, we've seen a lot of positive impact on some communities. Trinidad, like I just mentioned earlier, has definitely made a lot from that. But that's also actually come up because we're seeing other states legalize. If it becomes legal federally, there's talk of a 15% excise tax on the production of cannabis. So the whole tax question is definitely going to be revisited multiple times.
Where do you see growth opportunities for the cannabis industry in Colorado now that it is this established a decade in?
I think that there's still growth in towns like Colorado Springs that I mentioned that still don't allow it recreationally. There's still plenty of communities in here that ban the marijuana business overall. I don't know how it is proposed in Wisconsin, but in Colorado, if a town wants to have dispensaries, they have to explicitly allow them first. They just can't open up across the state. So there's definitely areas for growth. Colorado is still kind of viewed as a thought leader in cannabis. Since it's been legalized, it's really evolved in terms of the products that are available and the extraction and the cultivation. And there's still a lot of thought leadership out here for that. So I think as cannabis evolves, Colorado will still be viewed as an innovation leader. But I think as far as expansion, it's nearing its limit.
We have less than a minute left. But what about minority ownership? Have you looked into the diversity of business owners? What do you find there?
Yeah, that was something that Colorado's definitely been criticized for when it didn't have anything kind of in the language of legalization to create business opportunities or expungement opportunities for people who have been, unjustly profiled by cannabis laws and stuff like that. So there have been efforts to try and fix that. The ownership is still predominantly white, but there's been several million set aside for grants and technical assistance at the state level, and then in Denver as well. There's an incubation program for social equity business ownership. Kind of mixed reviews so far. Haven't really seen a lot of it get off the ground as people try to figure out how to keep these businesses not just getting the licenses, but how do they keep them thriving? How do they grow? And that's something that they're trying to figure out, not just in Colorado, but in other states as well.
Thomas, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
Thomas Mitchell has covered Colorado's cannabis industry and culture since 2014 for Denver's alt-weekly newspaper, Westward. And earlier, we talked with two members of Colorado's Division of Criminal Justice Office of Research and Statistics. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.